2237.
Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
With Gene and with Chris on the Paracast, we bring on an old friend of the show, someone who is one of those real, honest-to-goodness, expert UFO researchers. He also covers various cryptozoological phenomena. And he is none other than Stan Gordon. Of course, he became famous with the Kecksburg UFO sighting. But there's a lot going on, especially in the past year, in Pennsylvania. Stan, welcome to the show. Are we talking here about something that can be categorized as a UFO flap?
Well, I wouldn't say it's a flap as such, because I do get reports of sightings year after year. I think what was significant about last year was the fact that we're seeing some of the old classic UFO cases of not just lights in the sky that we've been hearing so many things about in the last 15 years, but many of these were really detailed close-up observations of something very unusual in the sky.
That's an interesting thing, too, here, that it seemed to me that a lot of the sightings you had in recent years tend not to be the close-up stuff that you had like in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. And I remember, of course, back in the 70s when people were saying, gee, UFOs are gone, and we had a lot of stuff going on in eastern Pennsylvania at that point in time, you know, down in Chester County and all that area that I used to work in. So we're seeing that kind of sighting again with a lot of detail, close-up, and all that stuff?
Well, again, even in the past 3, 4, 5 years, I've had some interesting, pretty detailed reports. But we seem to have an increase last year in some of these events. And, you know, a lot of people, when they talk about UFO sightings, they're visualizing these large disks and triangles and triangular objects. But a lot of people aren't aware of these smaller objects that I've been looking into since the 60s, of these generally spherical objects that run anywhere from a few inches to about a foot in diameter. And they're most intriguing because a lot of these cases, they're very close. I've had cases where they've entered open windows of homes and cars and moved around. I remember one fascinating case, I think it was going back in the 1980s, up towards Punxsutawney, where a woman, I had interviewed her, and she had told me where one of these small spheres had entered her kitchen and was floating around. So what's her response? She grabs her broom and begins to strike it, and she hit it, and she said it broke into two identical spheres. They floated around the house, and they went back out the window.
You know, when you talk about the spheres, I think of science fiction movies where spheres are used as some kind of device to do some kind of surveillance.
Back when you heard a little bit of discussion about these cases, I'm thinking late 60s, early 70s, when there were a few things in print about them. One of the speculation was that these could be some type of remote probes that were transmitting data back to a larger craft. Who knows? But, of course, that's not far off from, of course, a lot of our technology today. But one case I started to tell you about, it was so interesting, happened July 30th of last year. And this was a beautiful afternoon, July 30th, on a major highway, Interstate 80, that's out of Bloomsburg, Pennsylvania. And this fellow's driving down the road, and he has his windows down, the passenger side windows down. And as he's riding along, all of a sudden he notices this sphere that's about as big as a it's softball size, I believe, and it's about kind of a, not really luminous as such, but appears to be white and translucent, solid and round. It's keeping pace with his vehicle right outside the passenger side window. And then suddenly it floats inside the cab through the open window. And he's watching this thing dropping slowly to the floorboard, and it moves slowly around the driver along the floor. And he's watching this thing. He said, on the surface of the object, it appeared to be like crisscrossed and divided by a line about a quarter inch wide. And he said, it looked similar to a vein that was darker than the object and somewhat gray in color. And as he's watching this thing, he takes his foot off the accelerator because he's trying to concentrate more on the object. And it's moving around slowly again, proceeding up to the hump in the middle of a floorboard. Then it begins to move towards the driver's feet. And when it reaches his right foot, it suddenly stopped, reversed direction, and then it became centered on the hump, and then it departed the truck by passing through the seat, the back of the cab, and out the bed of the moving vehicle. He said it only lasts about 30 to 45 seconds, and didn't notice anything else unusual going on in the vehicle at the time, but this is a fascinating account.
That's absolutely bizarre. I've never heard of a sighting case like that. That's what do you make of that, Stan? What do you make of that?
You don't hear these cases very often. I did have one several years ago of something that paced a vehicle on a main road in daylight, and it was like a small cigar-shaped object, only I think about a foot in length. And that you don't hear about hardly at all. But I've heard these reports. I remember one of the early reports back in the 60s was on a golf course outside of Pittsburgh, and this little sphere was hovering right above these fellows who were golfing, and they were taking their golf clubs and swinging at this thing, and as they would swing at it, it would rise up and get out of range and come back down again, and then it finally floated off and disappeared. And but I have quite a lot of these cases in my records.
Is there, Stan, any kind of official explanation for these things? What do they say about? We understand, you know, with a UFO, they could say it's a conventional aircraft, but what do you say about these little spheres?
Well, again, it's been a part of the phenomena for many, many years.
Sure.
But it's a part of the phenomena that a lot of people out there are not even aware of. And, you know, a lot of the alleged abductees cases, people have talked about seeing these small globes of light in their homes and other situations during some of their experiences. And, in fact, there's many cases of small glowing spheres of light reported in conjunction with Bigfoot activity. And it's interesting. I'm sure we'll talk about some of the weird cases I've looked at over the years of UFOs and Bigfoot seen together. And what that's all about, of course, is something else that's very speculative, but there's something going on there at times. And interestingly, in the last year, I've been aware of some cases where some Bigfoot investigators out searching for evidence of Bigfoot didn't find any evidence of Bigfoot, but came across UFO encounters. So things are happening.
Chris, you can ask your question now.
Yeah, I was going to say that last account sounds like a haunted golf ball. But in terms of, one of the most famous Bigfoot UFO type combination reports we discussed last time you were on the show, why don't you give us a real quick recap over that case? It's so fascinating.
Well, there's a lot of them. I'm sure you're probably referring to the famous case, October 25th to 73 up in Fayette County, outside of Uniontown. I should go back a little further for your listeners who are not familiar with what was taking place and what was going on. And just to give them a little background, I started on this when I was 10 years old in 1959, believe it or not. So now it's going on 54 years I've been doing this research. And in all the years I've been doing this, of the thousands of people I've interviewed and the multitudes of cases I've investigated, I still have never seen a UFO or Bigfoot myself. Even though I think I was probably pretty close to a Bigfoot on some of the investigations, but I never got to see it. Going back to 1969, I set up my hotline for the public to report UFO sightings at that time. And as information locally was coming out that I had established this hotline, my phone in the house was just being inundated with reports of not only UFOs, but all kind of phenomena from alleged hauntings to strange creatures to anything strange or unusual. I was getting calls, and it was far more than I could handle on my own.
Now, so, in the late 60s, you were a pretty young guy.
Yeah, well.
Were you living at home, or were you out on your own?
No, I was at home.
So you had parents who might have wondered, what the heck is this guy doing?
Well, actually, my mother had passed away very young, and my father passed away back in, I was only probably, I'm trying to remember, 16, 17. I was quite young. And, but anyhow, they knew of my interest, and everybody around the area, I guess in my neighborhood, knew of my interest, and there was a lot of people who were fascinated by what I was doing. In high school, I was talking about these things and giving talks about it, and the kids were coming up to me. In fact, one of the first Bigfoot, possible Bigfoot accounts came to me from some of the kids in high school who were out parking with their girlfriends out in a particular area near outside of Blairsville, which is a cemetery area which has had a lot of history of strange happenings.
Kind of, sort of reminds you of all those classic car films, doesn't it? You have to wonder, though, why people go necking near a cemetery. Don't you think that's going to cause a problem? Stan Gordon joining Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors, classic science fiction at its best, available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
Quantitative easing, unemployment at depression levels, Europe financial system falling apart, China getting out of U.S. treasuries. At the end of 2008, the time of TARP, the national debt was at $11 trillion, gold trading around $850 per ounce. Close to 2012, the national debt exceeded $16.4 trillion, gold doubled to $1,600 per ounce. The $20 trillion threshold for the national debt is inevitable. Politicians in Washington have a ferocious appetite for spending and stimulus. What's worse, a printing press to finance. 100 years ago, we had a gold standard to limit this madness, but now you have to adopt your own gold standard. Don't be fooled with paper promises. Get Midas Resources 10 Reasons to Buy Gold free by calling 800-686-2237. Understanding the gold and silver market may be the only insurance you could have to avoiding the next economic crisis. Call 1-800-686-2237 and order your free copy. Again, that's 800-686-2237.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Healthy soils grow healthy plants. So before you plant your survival garden this year, is your soil healthy? Maximize your crisis garden soil with EM1 from Terraganics. EM1 organic soil conditioner, fertilizer amendment, and compost accelerant provides healthier gardens and faster, efficient garden composting. EM1 from Terraganics.com quickly improves soil structure by increasing nutrient availability and converting organic matter into soil humus. This improves seed germination and root growth, improves plant quality, size, color, flavor, nutrient value of fruits and vegetables, and improves shelf life. And when rain is not in the forecast, no worries. EM1 improves moisture retention in soils, helping reduce drought stress. Just like you prepare all else, prepare your crisis garden for maximum yields with EM1 from Terraganics.com. Order now at Terraganics.com or call toll-free 866-369-3678. That's 866-369-3678. Terraganics. Life's getting better.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
With Gene and Chris in the Paracast, Stan Gordon joins us. And we're talking about his ongoing research into UFOs and cryptozoological phenomena. And we were emphasizing at the beginning there, before we got into this other case you're talking about, the fact that there have been a larger number of UFO sightings in recent years, a lot of really compelling detailed cases in 2012, and a lot of reports of these tiny spheres that sometimes are seen in people's homes. And I suggested, as you basically mentioned earlier, maybe a surveillance device. I was particularly interested where he talked about the fact that someone hits it. and it becomes two. So if you hit the two again, it becomes four. Let's go back to what you were talking about here near the cemetery.
Okay, well, I was just going back and talking about the early days when I was in high school, and there was a kind of a rural remote area, and it was an area called the Livermore Cemetery where there was a lot of alleged haunting type of accounts, and a lot of kids would go parking out there. But what, they would come to me with stories, the fact that they're out there parking, and out of the woods came this gorilla that would throw rocks at their cars, and they go back into the woods. And then years later, historically, that was a very active area all along that general region for Bigfoot sightings. So that may have been one of the early Bigfoot sightings that we have on record. But as I was mentioning to you, 69, I set up this hotline, and I was overcome with reports. So I decided to set up a research group. That was the first of three research groups over the years. That was the first one was called the Westmoreland County UFO Study Group. And it was my determination to try to set up a group of research people, scientists, engineers, technicians, people who had specialized training to evaluate these cases and respond, hopefully, while the phenomenon is ongoing and get there very quickly. And that's what I did. And with my electronics background, we set up quite an elaborate communication center in my home, and I designed a two-way radio dispatch system so we could radio dispatch some of the investigators out for the scene, and we did that in many, many cases. So by the time, 1970 is when it was first formed, and by 1973, we were lucky that we already organized because nobody had any idea what was about to take place. And the group by that time had taken on interest to the public and the news media and even to the law enforcement people. And while we started out locally in the Pittsburgh area, by that time we had expanded that we were receiving reports from across the state of Pennsylvania. And interestingly, many of the calls were coming in from police departments and the news media referring cases to us to investigate. So here's this major wave in 1973. And as you fellows recall, in the fall of that year, the United States experienced this massive UFO wave that kind of peaked in the fall of 1973. Here in Pennsylvania, it started the first day of the year and continued to the end of the year with hundreds and hundreds of UFO cases. And again, as year after year goes by, even back then I found from being out in the field investigating that many UFO reports and other phenomena that initially look strange and unusual, when you investigate them, many determine either natural or man-made in origin. But there are cases that go on year after year you cannot easily dismiss. And back during 73, a lot of those reports were large structured craft, car chases, things hovering low over the highways and fields, landing cases, just amazing reports that were coming in. So then we get into the summer of 1973 when things get much, much more intriguing. And that's when we have this massive outbreak of Bigfoot sightings across the state of Pennsylvania. It first started here in southwest PA, and then it began to spread across the state and to other parts of the state, and it went on into 1974. And it was just incredible. I mean, there were multitudes of Bigfoot reports, and if you've read my Silent Invasion book, this is the book that focuses on all these events and just too much to even talk about today. But it was incredible. You know, when I started looking to Bigfoot reports back in the 60s, I came into the field open-minded to the possibility that some of these may be encounters with some type of unknown primate, which many people still believe today, and I keep an open mind as to what these things might really be, because I'm convinced that the Bigfoot phenomenon is real. The question is, what are we dealing with? Many questions rose during this period of time in 73 and 74 as we're investigating these cases, because many very unusual events were taking place. As these sightings continue to occur, and many are in daylight, sometimes multiple reports on the same day from widespread areas, sometimes multiple creature reports, lots of times we get out in the field and there's some type of physical evidence at the scene, and probably the most intriguing evidence that we saw and some of the police officers saw was how the animals responded when these creatures were nearby. That's something that nobody could fabricate. And it was most common with dogs. When these creatures were at a distance, the dogs would carry on and bark and go crazy. But when these things got in the very close range of these dogs, even the most vicious dog, they were just like paralyzed. They wouldn't bark. They would shake. They would shiver. They wouldn't respond. They would hide wherever they could. And it was a very, very interesting thing to see. and horses and cattle, and even indications of young children and babies in the home who were extremely upset when this activity was going on outside, and of course had no way of knowing what was happening. So that was very intriguing as well. But as these events are unfolding, we begin to get reports that are much stranger. And again, these are coming in from widespread areas, from individuals, mainly calling the police departments initially, who were very frightened people. And we had incidents where UFOs and Bigfoot were seen together at the same time and place. Or you'd have a UFO sighting, and within a short time later, you'd have a Bigfoot sighting, or vice versa. And there were lots of events that were very, very exciting. One of the first ones was September 27th, 1973, north of Pittsburgh, where two young women were outside in Aurora Air waiting for a friend. And here comes this large, hairy Bigfoot creature covered with white hair. You occasionally hear about these ones with white hair running across the field into the woods. But in one of its hands, it had a small spherical globe of luminous light. They ran and told the father of one of the girls who owned the property. He went down in the woods, and while he's down there, this object comes across the sky and projects this beam of light down into the woods. Well, we thought that was a fascinating case. But then the case you refer to was probably the case that really changed my belief structure and many of my investigators as to what we were dealing with. And this was October 25th, 1973, up in Fayette County. And Fayette County, you'll probably hear us mention this today on the show quite a bit. Fayette County is one of the counties here in southwest PA, which borders along the Chestnut Ridge. And the Chestnut Ridge runs from Preston County, West Virginia, through Westmoreland, Fayette, Indiana County. And that is probably one of the hottest areas of the United States for repeat year after year Bigfoot sightings and all kind of other strange phenomena, from UFOs to other cryptids, all kind of weird events. And that's been going on historically for many, many years. But on that particular day, it was about 10:30 that night, when I got a phone call from a state trooper from the Uniontown State Police Barracks, who had just come back from investigating this incident. And he himself sounded a little shook up, and he said he thought there was a good chance that something may still be up in the pasture when this event occurred. What the event was, this was a multiple witness UFO landing with two Bigfoot creatures in the field at the same time.
So this is putting all the phenomena together, Stan Gordon, where we have the UFO sighting, we have the Bigfoot, and we have so much more. We'll continue the coverage of the older sightings, but also as we progress, I'm going to ask Stan, as will Chris, about current cases, the most fascinating of the current cases in 2012, and whether we've seen any activity yet in the early part of 2013. We have Stan Gordon joining Gene and Chris. That means you're in
the Paracast.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio?
Something more important.
Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Hey neighbors, got a small business or a large company that needs to be online 24/7? Well, here's the little secret. To make sure your site is always online, you need world-class DNS service from Dyn. That's D-Y-N. For years, Dyn has been helping companies ranging from the scrappy young startup to the giant media moguls of the world with making sure websites are fast and always available and that your emails are getting delivered. D-Y-N. Get faster internet by using Dyn for DNS. Visit dyn.com/podcast30. Fill out the contact form or start shopping right away and save 30% by using the promo code podcast30 at checkout. Again, visit dyn.com, that's dyn.com/podcast30. Check them out today.
American gardeners and fellow patriots, make the right choice with your money, time, and your family food supply. Choose 100% pure heirloom seeds in the Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com. Why spend more? The Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com is only $37.95 and includes 20 varieties of pure, hardy, easy-to-grow heirloom seeds. Yes, only $37.95. That's 70% less than our competitors. You could buy three Survival Seed Vaults for less than one of theirs. The Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com. Ferguson.com includes detailed planting and seed saving instructions and ships same day. Plus, all orders over $49 ship free. MyPatriotSupply.com is American owned by patriots like you, passionate about freedom and preparedness. Call now, 866-229-0927. That's 866-229-0927. Or discover more emergency preparedness items when you order at MyPatriotSupply.com. Choose the original. Choose the Survival Seed Vault at MyPatriotSupply.com.
Lunch is ready!
And it's an MRE smorgasbord at LongLifeFood.com. In 1983, Long Life Food Depot was one of the first to sell MRE pouches to the public, and we're still selling them almost 30 years later. Today, Long Life Food Depot has the world's most complete MRE online buffet, because MREs are all we do. Tasty varieties of chicken, beef, salmon, and pasta entrees, plus sandwiches and our easy-to-use pouches. Full moisture, long shelf life, and ready to eat hot or cold. We sell by the pouch or cake, so the choices are endless, and so are the graduated quantity discounts. The more you buy, the more you save. Call 800-601-2833 or go to longlifefood.com to join our email list for upcoming announcements like the Rollaway Food Pod. Plus, enjoy fast and free shipping. Just call 800-601-2833 or visit longlifefood.com. Emergency preparedness, emergency relief. Longlifefood.com since 1983, sending real food to your real future.
Is 2013 your year to achieve more? More vitality? More health? More well-being? Hi, this is Pastor Jenny. For 25 years, I spent my life's work teaching others how to achieve more. But in 2010, I got a lesson of my own about RNA drops. I learned that there are millions of gene switches latent in every single cell of my body that are waiting for an activator. I learned by taking RNA drops, I could begin to activate that power in my cells and achieve the more that I desire. I'd like to share what I discovered with you and send you a free 30-day supply of RNA drops valued at $50 for just the cost of shipping and handling. Go to rnafreesample.com. That's rnafreesample.com. Or call me toll-free at 888-577-3703. That's 888-577-3703. rnafreesample.com. Discover the more that's waiting for you.
This is Leslie Kane, and I'm with the Coalition for Freedom of Information, and you are listening to the Paracast.
With Gene and Chris, you're in the Paracast with Stan Gordon. We explore the raft of paranormal events occurring in Pennsylvania. Been a while since I've been to Pennsylvania, and therefore I'm missing out on all the good stuff. So we have a case here where we see a UFO, and we also see reports of Bigfoot. How do we connect the two?
Well, here's the story. This is the general part of the story. There's a lot more that we won't even have time to get into. But about 9 o'clock that night, in a small rural farming community, there's about 15 people that observed this object. It's a red sphere about as big as a barn. It's about 100 feet off the ground, moving slowly down towards this pasture. The story focuses on the farmer's son. The farmer owned the property. His son went out there to visit him, and his wife are riding down the farm lane. They see this object in the sky, as others do, and he moves off to a neighbor's to get a different viewpoint of this thing coming down. So they watch this thing. It looks like it's landing in the pasture. So he and two young neighbor boys decide they're going to go up to see what's going on up there. So he stops over at his dad's farm. He grabs a .30-06, and he grabs a handful of ammunition, which includes a couple of tracers. So as they're moving down towards the pasture, in the distance, dogs are going crazy. They hear like a high-pitched sound, and they hear like a baby crying, whining sound, getting louder as they get closer. As they get up towards that general area, to go up towards the pasture, they get out of the vehicle, and they angle the vehicle with the headlights on so they can see where they're going, because, of course, it's dark. And they notice that the headlights look like they're being drained of power. They have not seen that before. Of course, that's something we have heard in lots of the older UFO cases. And as they get up to the top of the pasture, they're all in amazement, because about 250 feet away, here's this object that appears to be on the ground or right above it. And this thing now is not a complete sphere. It's like a hemisphere, like a half a sphere, flat bottom down, like a big white dome that's illuminating the whole area, maybe 100 feet or more in diameter. It's making this high-pitched sound. The whole area is luminous and glowing. They just can't believe what they're seeing. So they're studying this thing, and they're talking among themselves, like trying to figure out what is this and why is it here. And then their eyes are drawn to a fence line, a barbed wire fence, about 75 feet away. And along that fence, they notice these two tall figures, one behind the other, slowly moving towards them. And, of course, being out in Pennsylvania, the first thought is they've got to be bear. What else could they be? Because there's a lot of hair on these things. And then you soon realize that, geez, that fence post is 6 feet tall. The one's got to be at least 8 foot tall. The other's around 7 foot tall. The biggest one's in the front. The other one's falling right behind it. And they're moving one at a time along the fence line. They're going post by post. And these things are very tall, cover long, dark, matted hair. They have arms hanging down almost to the ground. They have glowing green eyes and are making this whining, crying sound. Well, they're moving again towards them, and the one boy starts yelling at him, shoot him, shoot him. So the guy finally fires his first shot, which is a tracer, and that tracer is going to give that instant flash of light. He fires the second round, which is the second tracer. And as he fires that second tracer, that largest of the two creatures makes this loud whining cry, reaches out as though to grab at that tracer. And the moment it does that, that object in the field suddenly disappears and vanishes. It's gone. There's no more sound. The glowing is all gone. It disappears. So the creatures turn around at that point, slowly start walking back towards the opposite side of the woods where they came from. And the one kid runs out of the field. He's so shook up. And he fires some live ammo at these creatures. And the guy's been hunting for years. And he said, I remember how he told me how at least the largest of the creatures turned around with a staring right at him with his glowing green eyes and he's shooting into him. And he said he knows he hit that thing, but he said there was no apparent injury to either one. And they just kept walking away from them. So they finally ran out of there, and they went back to the house and told the family what happened. They took them to a neighbor, and they called the state police. And then about 45 minutes later, when the trooper arrives, he talks to the witness, and the witness tells him about it, and the guy just says, forget about it. You're going to think I'm crazy. And the trooper said, well, we did get a report of two similar creatures last night, so we have to go investigate. So they go up in the troop car. And what I'm told is the trooper said that area where the object had been on the ground or right above it was self-luminescent and glowing, about 100 feet or more in diameter. The animals wouldn't go anywhere near it. He shined his flashlight beam into it. He could barely see the beam from the brightness. He said if he had a newspaper, he could have sat down within it and read the newspaper from the light coming off of it. So the story goes on and on. They end up leaving the area. They go back to the state police barracks. At that point, both the trooper and the witness are taken to two separate rooms and separately interviewed. And after that, I was contacted. We got our team up there. It was already late at night, but we got our team together, checked our equipment out, got up to the area. It was early morning hours. By the time we got there, the area was no longer glowing. The radiation levels were normal. The animals still wouldn't go anywhere near it. And then the story gets stranger and stranger, and we could go on forever, but that's why I cataloged that whole report in my Silence Invasion book. And very intriguing. The late Dr. Berthold Schwartz, who was a famous psychiatrist, he was in New Jersey at the time. He came up here and spent a week investigating the case and interviewing all the people involved and went away convinced that these people were all telling the truth, the best of their knowledge. And it was just one of many cases that began to make us wonder exactly what we're dealing with. And, of course, after that series of events and the many years since, because I've investigated hundreds of Bigfoot cases in Pennsylvania over the years, like the skeptics, I have to ask the question, if these things are real, and I'm convinced that people are seeing these things, why don't we have more physical evidence? Why don't we have any bodies by now? It does not make any sense. And then when you look back at some of the cases that we had in 73 and the 74, and there's one fascinating case that I don't know if we ever talked about before, but I should tell you about it. It gave us the clue as to why we may not have any bodies of these creatures.
Maybe you should tell our listeners again about this, because if you discuss this a year or two ago, it's not as if they're going to go back to the episode.
Okay, well, there were other incidents along this line. One of the things that we found in some of the investigations that our investigators would be out there, and we'd be following a series of footprints that just suddenly stopped and vanished. The ground conditions were suitable. There should have been more tracks. In some cases, it seemed like the tracks that suddenly came out of nowhere started and stopped. Other odd things were going on, like one man had called us and told us he had a relatively new car. He was riding down this road. All of a sudden, this big, hairy creature ran out in front of his car, and as it did, his motor began to sputter. And there's a lot of weird, strange cases, which you don't hear about very often. But February 6, 1974, It's a very interesting case. I was on the scene early the next morning because those who are listening, if you were living at the time, you'll remember that date and that time period because there was gas rationing going on. So I couldn't get gas the next morning.
Oh, and do I remember that. You'd have to buy gas on every other day. You get to the gas station, and I was living in a city at that time, Coatesville, Pennsylvania, where they had, what, two gas stations or something. So, you know, you had to spend 3 or 4 hours.
Yeah. So not only that, the reason there was the gas strike was because there was a nationwide trucker strike going on. There were shootings going on. There was a lot of violence regardless across the country. So in Pennsylvania, the National Guard were patrolling with the state police. So in this case, both the National Guard and the state police responded to this incident. And again, I couldn't get up until the next morning because I had no way to get gas. So anyhow, it was very interesting, too, because the state police took the case very, very seriously. What happened was they received a report of an object, maybe a spaceship or something, over the area and these hairy creatures in the area at the same time. But here's what we find out. Here's this woman who's lived in the mountains all her life. She has a nice little cabin home deep in the mountains, and she was sitting inside watching TV, and everything is normal, and all of a sudden she hears this commotion on her porch. And she had a little pile of garbage, I think it's like pop cans or whatever, over in the corner. Something was rattling the cans. And anyhow, her thought was, well, there had been a pack of wild dogs have been going through there on occasion recently. She figured these dogs would probably be back, so she said to herself, I think I'll grab my shotgun, and I'll fire over their heads and scare the dogs away.
Before we find out what happens when she tried to scare the dogs away, doesn't sound like it was quite what she expected. And by the way, when I say this, I live in a neighborhood where we have 6 dogs on one side, and we have 5 dogs on the other. And sometimes you hear them during the show, so it's fascinating. We have Stan Gordon joining Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN. Great talk radio starts here.
Is there a secret UFO agenda? Do strange creatures from the darkest corners of the mind roam the earth? Is there evidence for mind control, time travel, or devious government conspiracies? Find out the inside scoop on the latest conspiracies, paranormal activity, and Freudian phenomena when you subscribe to Tim Beckley's Conspiracy Journal. It's jam-packed with stories, special book and DVD promotions, and the best news, it's absolutely free, sent right to your mailbox. Plus, a bonus free email newsletter sent out every Friday. Simply send an email with your name and address to MrUFO@webtv.net. That's MrUFO@webtv.net. Find out what they don't want you to know.
Are you still a traditional smoker? Now experience a new lifestyle and try vaping with e-cigarettes by LeCig. Imagine no ashes, stains, nasty smell, or coughing and hacking. With LeCig e-cigarettes' revolutionary microelectronic technology, rechargeable battery, and unique replaceable cartridge, you'll get all the benefits and satisfaction of smoking without the hazards. Choose your taste from a wide variety of our new American-made Vaporeon e-liquids at LeCig.com. And LeCig smokes the competition by serving thousands of worldwide customers with real people customer service, fast, free, same-day shipping, and a 30-day warranty and satisfaction guarantee. So are you ready for a new vaping lifestyle? Then call 870-518-4307. That's 870-518-4307. Or visit LeCig.com, spelled LeCig.com. LeCig e-cigarettes for today's modern smoker.
Is there a less expensive way to detoxify your body?
Yes. Microplant powder from hempusa.org frees your body of toxins from vaccinations, pharmaceutical residues, heavy metals, parasites, and toxic chemicals in your food and water for around $10 a month. Microplant powder removes virus, fungus, and bacteria while cleaning and purifying the blood, lungs, stomach, and colon. It unclogs arteries and softens heart valves. Plus, microplant powder can be taken with any liquid, any pharmaceutical, at any time. It's truly the easiest and most cost-effective way to clean and detoxify your body for around $10 a month. Microplant powder from hempusa.org. It really works. And for persistent health issues, try our Matrix Biopowder together with microplant powder for a deeper cellular cleaning. Call 888-910-4367. That's 888-910-4367. And see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you at hempusa.org.
A little over a year ago, I began to do a lot of research into why, even though I had a pretty good-sized meal, that I was still starving. And my research led me to a well-known fact that most of the soils that we grow our crops on here in the United States and across the industrialized world are almost completely depleted of almost all of the key minerals and trace elements that our bodies need to rebuild themselves, fight off cancer, and be healthy. I then searched out the best vitamin and mineral company out there and discovered Youngevity. The Youngevity products are designed to give you the real nutrition you need, and once you've got that, you don't have to eat as much to be satisfied. I've lost 37 pounds in 2 months simply getting the vitamins and minerals I need. Check it out for yourself. It's incredible. Go to InfoWarsTeam.com today and order your first canister of Beyond Tangy Tangerine Complete Multivitamin Mineral Complex Dietary Supplement. That's InfoWarsTeam.com.
Hi, this is Don Ecker, and you are tuned into the Paracast. Let me tell you what, you're going to hear stuff here that you probably won't hear anywhere else. Hear that, George Snorri?
With Gene and Chris on the Paracast, Stan Gordon talking about paranormal events in Pennsylvania. And once we get past the older cases, I want to push him towards the newer cases, but let's talk about this one. So she takes out her shotgun to scare away the dogs that are bothering her. But it wasn't quite what she expected.
So she loads the one chamber of her shotgun. She walks over to the wall to turn on the switch that turns the light out, turns the light on the porch. So she switches on the light. She opens up the door. She walks outside. There's no dogs there. Right in front of her, a few feet away, there's this huge hairy creature with its arms straight up over its head. I remember many times doing interviews with her, and this woman never, ever mentioned the term Bigfoot. She said it was a great big hairy ape. And so she sees this huge animal in front of her. What does she do? She aims her shotgun at it, and she fires right into it. She said there was this bright flash of light, like a strobe on a camera. She said that's the best way to explain it, and it disappeared right in front of her. So anyhow, her in-laws lived 100 feet away. And they, of course, they hear the gunshot, and they call her on the phone and ask her what happened, and she's explaining it to him. The son-in-law decides he's going to go up to see what's going on, so he grabs his .45, his pistol, and he begins to make his way up towards her cabin. And he described being surrounded by four or five hairy people with eyes like coals of fire. And he starts shooting at them and runs into the house. And at the same time, here's this large object with different colored lights on it. It's like a big Christmas ornament hovering over the woods at the same time. They call the state police. And as I mentioned, during that period, the state police and some National Guardsmen came up to that scene that night. I got there early the next morning and got to interview the family, the people involved. We met with an animal protector officer from that county, and we were searching the area for other evidence. And we were out in the middle of the woods, and we found right in line with the porch, we found that BB pattern in a tree out in the woods. Very interesting case. I talked to the primary state trooper who was the main investigating officer, and he said, I don't know what was going on out there, but he said something really weird was going on. Because he said, I'd never seen anything like this before. Because these people had lots of animals, of domestic farm animals, horses and cattle, and cats in the house, and lots of dogs. And he said it was just unbelievable. He said when he got on the scene, he said in particular, it was very, you could see it with the dogs. He said these dogs would not respond at all. He said they wouldn't bark, they wouldn't move. He said they were just like completely frightened, paralyzed. He said one of those dogs, and I think it was an Eskimo Spitz, I can't be positive, but it was a big dog, was in a cage, and he tried to pull that dog out, and that dog wouldn't move. I mean, it should have ripped his arm off, and that dog would not respond whatsoever.
That dog was a pretty smart creature, wasn't it?
And the next morning, they're all back to normal. Everything's normal when I got there. That's an interesting, interesting case. And that wasn't the only case we had of people shooting these things and allegedly disappearing. And we had one case where up in the area where there had been other sightings by different people, this thing, at times, people reported that they couldn't see the entire body. Only parts of the torso at times would be visible. So just a lot of weird stuff was going on. And again, I have to stress, most UFO incidents have nothing to do with Bigfoot, and most Bigfoot encounters have nothing to do with UFOs. However, there is a small percentage of cases that are well documented that seem to show some kind of relationship. What, if there's any direct relationship, I don't know. I don't have the answers. But I can tell you, and you fellas know this, for years and years and years, there's been discussion about these topics. I started writing about this back in the 70s after these events. You're seeing more and more discussion about this more recent years because there seems to be more open-mindedness now, especially from the Bigfoot community, asking more and more questions like myself, like, why don't we have any bodies? And could there be more to the subject now than we realized before, which is what I've been saying for years.
You know, I want to just mention one thing here, which I'm noticing. You have been active with these organizations since the 60s. Do you find it difficult at all or more difficult today to get people to help you with investigations, particularly scientists and police officers? Because it sounds like back in the 60s and 70s, it was no problem. You were able to get people to help you without going through red tape.
I can tell you, even back in those days, I mean, back in those days is when we really had the high amount of ridicule publicly. It's not as bad today because of all the TV shows and all the coverage, and more and more people are more open-minded and more interested. But I can tell you, you know, back in the 60s and 70s, Dr. Hynek used to talk about the Invisible College. And basically what he was referring to is that there were a lot of people in the scientific community that were looking into these phenomena, but they were doing it anonymously because of their positions. Well, I can tell you, in my early research groups, I had many of the top people from Gulf Research, Westinghouse, Alcoa, from universities and colleges in Pennsylvania, and a lot of these, I'd say most of the people working with me did it anonymously because of their positions. Now, I don't have my research groups anymore. Of course, I was doing that from the 70s to 1993. I was basically operating two groups out of my own pocket plus working full-time and having a family, and this has got too much. So I've been working as an independent researcher since 1993, and I still take calls from the public and get a lot of emails and reports come here constantly. So I don't have my groups anymore. However, I still do have access to various research people who, again, are working with me. Many of these people have worked with me for years, and so we do it, but a lot of them do it anonymously. But it doesn't look today like you had the scientific interest nationwide that you did back in the 60s, the 70s, the 80s.
I'm going to ask you a hard question here, Stan, real hard question. You've been doing this since the 50s, very heavily involved, and the 60s through today. You're still very active in research, even though you're doing it as an independent person. What have we learned through all those decades about UFOs and about Bigfoot and about any of the other phenomena that you've explored? What progress have we made?
Well, I have learned as an independent researcher, and what I've learned being involved in so many aspects of cryptozoology and UFOs is that the phenomena is much, much more complex than most people have any idea of. I think the more I know about it, maybe the less we know, and that sounds funny. We know a lot about the subject in general, but the more we look at it and the more cases we look at it and look at different aspects of it, I think the more it indicates that we're dealing with something that is extremely interesting, extremely unusual, and there's a lot of things out there that science does not have an explanation for.
Well, which are the specific aspects that take it into a higher level of strangeness than just E.T. and some missing link?
Well, my feeling is when you're dealing with the UFO phenomenon, let's talk about that first, that there is no easy one origin for the unexplained category of the UFO phenomena. That's my own feeling, that we're dealing with more than one source. and it's very complex. I think there's a small percentage of cases that could very well be extraterrestrial. I mean, from the people I've talked to over the years and different sources and people I've discussed this with, I think it's very good possibility that our government does have in their possession some crashed vehicles and probably some actual bodies. And you look at other cases over the years of many people I've interviewed, people who have seen objects that suddenly appear and disappear, that they physically change one form into another, incidents that seem to suggest that maybe in certain cases certain people have certain abilities, they're able to perceive certain phenomena that others can't. I've had cases where there's been, let's say, a group of people, and only a few people in that group could describe and see the object when the other people couldn't see it, for example.
Now, that's one thing we've talked about occasionally on the PowerCast. And I want to ask you more about why you think the government has the crash UFOs and ET on ice. But that is, why on Earth would something that supposedly is real and physical be visible to some people, but not to others?
Yeah, and I think, again, I started doing studies many years ago, and unfortunately, with no funding, with huge amounts of reports come in constantly over the years, basically, you know, doing this as a full-time job, but it wasn't, because I had a full-time job, and paying for all this research out of my own pocket with all these groups and all the people involved over the years, I was limited to what I could do in certain areas. But as I was looking to some of the early alleged abduction cases and looking to other cases, as we're interviewing people and we're being very careful with interviews and not leading people, not putting suggestions in people's minds, so you had to be really careful how you did the interviews and ask questions. But you began to find that some interesting things began to show up. You know, in some cases I began to find, and I don't have enough data, and never had enough data because I didn't have time to get into it, to see what percentages and, you know, how big of an area this was. But when you start interviewing certain people who had these experiences, some with UFOs, some with Bigfoot, and sometimes you began to find that some of these people and their families had a long history of not only UFO experiences, but other paranormal experiences, encounters with strange creatures throughout their lives. So many of the alleged abduction people who were involved with some of the abduction claims, most of their events started when they were very young children.
Got to break at that point. We'll get to our next segment. We have Stan Gordon joining Gene and Chris in
the Paracast.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. If you'd like to listen to GCN programs on the go, I have great news. GCN has created a Droid and iPhone application, and it's free. Just as easy as going to GCNlive.com, click on the banner, and download. Before you know it, you'll be listening to your favorite hard-hitting GCN shows, live or on demand, right on your Droid or iPhone, 24/7 and on the go. So download the Droid and iPhone app free by clicking on the banner at GCNlive.com. Thanks again for listening to GCNlive.com. Again, that's GCNlive.com.
We the people grow cotton, weave fabric, engrave ink, embed strips and fibers to protect from counterfeit and carting to a private bank, having it lent back at interest, forcing taxes to service debt. This capitalism, or was Jefferson correct when stating a central bank issuing the public currency is a greater menace to the liberties of the people than a standing army? Ted Anderson, I'm placing a free silver dollar in a book that explains our monetary system. Call for your copy, 800-686-2237. It's time to understand the system. Call 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.
You've heard about or even used colloidal silver for years. But did you know there's a silver product that is much better, faster, safer, and superior? Silver that is fundamentally distinctive, different, and the only patented silver since the original colloidal silver in 1923? Introducing Silver Protocol from Neoferra. Think about this. What will you do when you can't get antibiotics? Silver Protocol should be in every grab bag, the one product you gotta have when it all breaks loose. Unlike colloidal silver, use Silver Protocol preventatively or whenever infection occurs. Silver Protocol can be boiled or frozen, yet is still 100% effective, has super long shelf life, and will not cause argyria or turn you blue. Order Silver Protocol at 800-213-0644. That's 800-213-0644. Or go to Neoferra.com, spelled Neoferra.com. Sign up for our free educational email series at Neoferra.com. Silver Protocol, the ultimate immune booster.